history through the eyes of those who lived it. This is Hometown Heroes, proudly honoring the men and women whose service and sacrifice have secured our freedom. Now, the host of Hometown Heroes, Paul Leffler.
Welcome to another edition of Hometown Heroes, the program that reminds you, no matter where you live in this great country of ours, no matter how big or how small your hometown might be, there are people right there around you who you might be fooled into thinking are pretty ordinary, but in actuality have been through really extraordinary things in the service of our country. And we want to honor our veterans for their service and sacrifice, preserve their stories so we never forget the price that's been paid for our freedom. And along the way, we learn a lot. We're educated. We're entertained. Quite often, we find ourselves inspired by these stories from our greatest generation. One of the things that can really bring history alive today, developments like the news released last week of the discovery of the cruiser USS Helena, found a little more than half a mile deep on the floor of the New Georgia Sound in the Solomon Islands. It's just the latest find by the crew of the research vessel Petrel, commissioned by Microsoft co-founder Paul Allen, who now in just the past year has located the wreckage of the long-lost cruiser Indianapolis, the carrier Lexington, the light cruiser Juno, and now the Helena. When word came of the Juno's discovery in the Solomon Islands a couple weeks ago, I contacted Ski Bernacki, a Pearl Harbor survivor who had seen the Juno go down, claiming the lives of nearly 700 Americans in the Naval Battle of Guadalcanal in November 1942. Ski had quite a reaction, but it was nothing compared to the news that wasn't too far behind. Nearly 75 years after the sinking of the Helena left him swimming through oily waters for a while without a life jacket, we'll hear more about that in a bit, that cruiser aboard which he endured some of World War II's most intense battles was discovered in her final resting place. So when PaulAllen.com announced that the Helena had been found, I reached out to Chase Anderson, a retired educator, who first met Ski when profiling him for a great series of magazine articles on World War II vets, who has truly changed this 96-year-old's life and remains a big part of his life. Chase and Ski happened to be in the middle of their regularly scheduled high-stakes game of cribbage, but the energetic nonagenarian was beside himself at the news and was soon online looking at photos sent back from the Petrel submersible. I knew I needed to cruise up to California's gold country and capture a little bit of his reaction for you and let him reflect on all the unexpected developments he's experienced since we first met him on Hometown Heroes about a year and a half ago.
Just getting back to that first interview with you, God, I tell you, I've had more people ask me about different things from all over the country. Matter of fact, I just sent off some pictures that some guy from Austria wanted me to sign and autograph some photos. I'll show you the pictures of them. It's something else.
Well, yeah, you're a famous guy. You're pretty well known, but I bet you never anticipated when you first talked to Chase Anderson here in Jamestown about your Pearl Harbor story that over the course of a couple of years, you'd go to Pearl Harbor for the 75th anniversary. You'd go to Washington, D.C. with Central Valley Honor Flight. You'd hear that the Juno, a ship that you saw sunk, and you saw parts of it flying through the air, would be discovered. And then the most recent news that your own ship, the Helena, was found. Could you ever have dreamed that those things would happen?
Oh, my God, I'll tell you, you don't know how many times. You know, it's going to be 75 years in about 3 months when we were sunk, July the 6th. 1943. And there's been times I get on a computer and I get to going back to the Solomon Islands and that area down in there where all this stuff happened. And I wonder how deep the ship was and different things. And finally here, all of a sudden it hit me all at one time. You don't know the feeling unless it happens to you. My God, I'll tell you, I couldn't even sleep last night. All right, just thinking about all the things I thought about my friends and stuff that came to my mind last night.
You thought of friends from the Helena and what they were doing all those years ago?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah, guys that I knew, went on Liberty with, and guys that I knew that got killed and stuff, and I wondered about. It was something else. It really was.
You can't dive down there and touch your ship, but these pictures are probably the next best thing. What was it like to look at those pictures and see the 50 on the side of the hole?
Oh, that's the thing that really got to me. When I saw that on there, I says, honey, they must have did a hell of a good job painting. And that was, you know, the funny part about that, that's the numbers on the bow. And the bow was completely blown off all the way to it too. So it, I don't know why it, when it settled, I don't know whether it's right close to the main part of the ship or what. But something else, all that rust and stuff, God. And I... The one thing comes to my mind is, if they ever get down there, I hope to go to my locker, because I had just bought a watch, a wristwatch, at the ship's store, and I think I wore it once or twice before the battle, and the night of the battle I didn't wear it, and it's in my locker down there somewhere. I even forget how much I paid for it, but it was my first wristwatch.
Uh-huh. Well, we'll send a memo to Paul Allen and his team that if they happen to be in there, which I doubt they're going to be allowed to do, but you never know. What else did you notice in those photos and just a little piece of video that's come out from their dive?
The thing comes to my mind is the bow was blown off, so when the ship went down, it couldn't have been very much current, because the bow is pretty close to, I think, the main part of the ship. And there's not too many pictures of it right now, but probably eventually it will be a lot, because that doohickey that they used, that guy sent it down there, the unmanned submarine explorer, whatever it is, found it, God, after almost 75 years.
And there's very few of you guys left that were on the ship when that happened. If Paul Allen were to call you right now and want to talk to you about it, the guy who paid for them to go down and find your ship, what would you want to say to him?
Oh, I'd be so thankful to God Almighty. Hey, 75 years, I've been thinking about this, you know. Every time I get on a computer, matter of fact, I have a map over there with my pinprint right on it, right where the ship went down in Kula Gulf and all the battles that took place. And we had 13 naval engagements. A lot of stuff happened down there in them days.
When he says a lot of things, he means a lot of things. And you can see that map he's talking about for yourself in a short video posted on the Hometown Heroes Facebook page and at hometownheroesradio.com, where you can also link to our original interview with Ski from 2016. We'll hear more about his most recent adventures in a bit, but for now, to help you put all of that in perspective, let's get a taste of what he went through in World War II, starting with December 7th, 1941.
The night before,
yeah.
I went ashore with a couple of buddies of mine. We got back at 12 o'clock, and this one buddy, real good buddy of mine, Charlie Cioffi, had the duty that day, so he was on the quarter deck. I had the duty from 8 to 12. And I woke up in the morning, I did my thing, and then I had breakfast, and I decided I'd go ashore. So I went down to the Foot Locker, and I broke out my shoes and put another buffing on them, and I was sitting there, and I got an uncomfortable feeling. And I said, I think I'll go topside and have a smoke. So as I started up the ladder, the general quarters alarm sounded, and it says, all hands manage your battle stations. Not knowing what the heck was going on, I dropped everything, which you were trained to do, and I headed for my mount, my battle station. And just as I got inside the mount, there was a big explosion. And I figured, what the hell's going on here, you know? We manned the mount, and they reported to sky aft, went into director control, and we started firing. From what I understand, I think we were the first ship to get hit. It came over Ford Island toward the 1010 dock that we were tied up at, in place of the Pennsylvania, which should have been there, but the Pennsylvania had moved forward into the dry dock.
Right.
Which was ahead of us.
And when you say there was an explosion, I want to make it clear for people listening, you're not talking about an explosion on another ship. You're talking about an explosion on your ship that you felt.
Oh, yeah, the ship just shook, and I didn't know what was happening. You know, who would think you were going to be in the start of a war?
Right.
You know, but like I say, being we had so much training that everything fell into place. You did things automatically without even thinking.
And I want to ask about something else you said there, too. You know, you said that you were going to go ashore, and then you got an uneasy feeling. Premonition that something was wrong, or what?
I don't know what it was. I really don't. Honestly, I'm being honest. I said, I think I'll just go up topside and have a cigarette, you know. And as I did, the announcer system from the quarterdeck are telling us, man your battle stations. So being trained like we were, everybody headed for what they were supposed to do. And what was bad about it is it happened so fast that we didn't have time to set the damage control all over the ship. So when we got hit in the forward fire room, between the forward fire room and the forward engine room. Just put a big gaping hole in the side, and she just settled there at the dock, which wasn't very deep, you know, just deep enough to in and out.
Right. So if you guys would have been hit in the same spot on the ship but been in deeper water, it would have been a much different scenario.
Well, that's another story about Kula Gulf.
Yeah, we're going to get to that. The end of your ship. So December 7th, this morning, you get to that battle station, and you're loading these shells, loading shell after shell after shell, I would imagine. But you can't see anything, right?
No, because we're inside the mount.
So you have no idea what's happening out there.
I had no idea. And then all of a sudden there was I forget how long we were firing, but then we had a lull. And we were told to go outside, clear the casings off the deck, throw them over on the dock, and cut the awnings down, because we had awnings, furled awnings, you know, up over the bow and the quarter deck and stuff. We had to get that canvas off the ship so it wouldn't catch fire and stuff and whatnot. When I went outside to throw those casings and to clear the decks, I looked over toward Battleship Row, and all you could see was this smoke and the mortar launches and tugs running around picking up survivors and stuff. It was off in the distance,
right?
You know, but you could just see turmoil, black smoke rising. And at the time, if I remember right, when I looked over there, I thought I saw the Oklahoma capsizing. Mm. So then all of a sudden, here we come again, back in the mount, started shooting again.
So you're a 19-year-old kid. You come up to the top of your ship in this paradise that you've been enjoying for a while.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And this is what you see. How mind-blowing was that to look at that?
I don't know how to explain it. What the heck's going on? You know, even right now, I can't imagine how I felt.
Was it, I guess, opposite ends of that spectrum would be, on one hand, it could be a punch to the gut that makes you really emotional, and on the other hand, just so shocking that you're almost numb to it and you don't even know what's going on. Was it somewhere in between that?
Even right now, I can remember a lot of stuff that happened after the attack, and them guys went over to get burned and stuff. You could smell the flesh from at the hospital when the wind changed and blew over the harbor. They moved us into dry dock, and it was a new dry dock they were building at the time. It hadn't even been completed. But we got in there, and they closed the case on and didn't have any facilities, you know, for this and that. And we had to do our stuff outside over the top of a 2x4.
What about when the second wave of planes came in?
All I remember is we just kept shooting. You don't think about what's happening, you're just doing it. You've had so much training, I guess. And then after the battle was over and the whole bit like that, everybody was trigger happy. They sent us sandwiches to eat, and we kept everything manned. All I know is I knew Charlie saw if he got injured, because when the flare of the torpedo went up through the ventilation system, it come out through the exhaust, which was over the top of the quarterdeck, and I understand he got burned and he ended up in the hospital. That was the last time I saw Charlie.
So he's one of your good buddies, and you find out he's been burned from head to toe.
Yeah, and like I say, he ended up in the hospital. I never heard about him after that.
Here you are. This has all happened. You know your ship is damaged. You know people have died. And one of your best buddies is burned so bad it burned all the clothes off of him.
Yeah, just give you a shirt, yeah.
What did that do to you, to know and see things like that?
Well, see, I didn't see that, but I heard about what happened to Charlie.
Yeah.
That he got burned, and the guys that did get burned, to start out with, we used to have inspections where they wore full uniform, whites. And then Eleanor Roosevelt come over before Pearl Harbor and had everybody send in 3 sets of whites and cut them down to where they looked like the Bermudas, you know, the shorts. And that was a bad thing, because when the guys got burned and stuff like that, the skin was exposed.
Yeah.
I can remember the first inspection that we had wearing them new outfits. We were up on a quarterdeck, and the captain, Max Dietermore, went through the lines in 2 ranks, facing forward, and then they go front rank about facing, and then they have the inspection, you know. So as soon as that first rank did an about face, and we were facing one another. Everybody looked at their faces first, and then they went down. Everybody had big tans, and they got down to the legs. They were white. Some of them were like toothpicks. They were big pot bellies. And I don't think there was anybody smiling or laughing like Helen. Yeah.
That's funny.
Yeah. But like I say, that exposure of the skin was a big thing. Mm-hmm. On them burned guys. Wherever the thickness was on a skivvy shirt, it was less burned with...
Sure.
Then, you know.
So there are guys that are burned. There are guys that are hit by projectiles, the shrapnel. And as I read in Chase's article, you saw a guy who was hurt pretty severely on one of the gun mounts, right?
What happened is one of the guys, he was in a turret 2. And in order to get into turret 2, which was higher than the turret 1, mm-hmm. you had to climb up a ladder to get up inside the turret. Mm-hmm. As he was reaching up into the ladder to climb up, some kind of fragment or something hit that barbette and hit him in the chest and tore his arm off. So they put him on the beach. And then when we had the canvas out there, we took the awnings down, he was inside of one of those awnings.
With his whole arm blown off.
Yeah, dead in a doornail.
And you saw that?
Yeah, that's the only time I ever saw anything like that that was real bad, except when I was in Guam and it's all the Japanese dead bodies and stuff and whatnot.
So seeing all of this, is that something that makes you angry? Are you just sad? How would you describe the emotions that stirred up in you?
I don't know how it affected me, honestly. Like I say, I guess I was going into what they call that post-traumatic deal. Because I got to where I just didn't give a rat's butt, you know, about anything. I just did what I thought I was supposed to be doing.
What about the days and weeks that followed the attack? What were you guys doing?
Well, what happened after the attack, and we were able to, they put us in the dry dock. And they patched the hole in the hull. And then we went back to Vallejo, and they took all the machine guns off, and they put 1.1s on, and then 40 millimeters. When we were well enough that they thought that we were able to go out, we stopped in Pearl, and on our way to Guadalcanal, the South Pacific. We met up with a ship from the East Coast, I think it was to Brazil. We were escorting, I think, the Long Island escort carrier with reinforcements of fighter planes, F4Us for the Marines on Guadalcanal. And we got there just right after the first battle of Guadalcanal, where the Quincy Vincennes, Astoria, and the Canberra were sunk.
Uh-huh.
We had an advanced base called Espirito Santo. We went down there, and then we operated out of there, in and out. The next thing that I can remember is September the 15th, we were operating with the Wasp. She got hit. It was on a payday, September the 15th.
1942.
Yeah.
And this is another one of the great tragedies of World War II. Yeah. What happened to the USS Wasp?
Well, she got torpedoed. We were one of the escorts in the group, and we circled and circled, and the guys went over the side, and some of them guys went over the side being payday. When they dropped the charges, you look over the side, and you could see money rolling around.
So you see a ship that got torpedoed and is sinking, and you see basically the entire crew of the ship going overboard and in the water. Did you guys pick up some of those guys?
I think we picked up 400 guys that day.
And I'm just wondering, as you are witnessing the destruction of another ship, and your ship's already been hit once, and you're picking up guys, well, you were hit at Pearl Harbor.
Yeah.
You're picking up guys from a sinking ship. Does it ever occur to you that could happen to you someday, that you might find yourself in that position?
I told you, heck no. No, we thought we were invincible.
But the first week of July in 1943 would tell a different story for the cruiser USS Helena, discovered now nearly 75 years later. It's time for our first break, but when we come back, hear what Ski Bernacki went through when the Helena was devastated by 3 Japanese torpedoes. Check out the photos and video at hometownheroesradio.com or the Hometown Heroes Facebook page, and we'll be right back after this.
Remember when the bank gave you free checking and savings accounts, even making money for you when you kept your dollars there? Paul Leffler here to say I've recaptured those days, and you can too with EECU. It's not a bank, it's a non-profit nonprofit credit union that just keeps growing and growing. The newest branch is in Tulare, and nearly a quarter million EECU members represent 10 different California counties. As little as $250 in a savings account earns you dividends. And access is so easy. 30,000 ATMs, free mobile banking. And I haven't even told you what I love most about EECU, the credit union's support of causes up and down our area, like Central Valley Honor Flight. Nearly 1,000 veterans have gotten to see their memorials for free because of the leadership and financial support of EECU. Ready to join the team yet? Call 1-800-538-3328.
This is Hometown Heroes, celebrating everyday Americans who answer the call of duty.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes, and a chance here that we just can't take for granted. When Paul Allen announced that his RV Petrel team had discovered yet another sunken World War II ship, the cruiser USS Helena, it was powerful enough to look at those photos from more than half a mile below the surface and to hear the Helena's service record from World War II. But 96-year-old Ski Bernacki of Jamestown, California, adds so much more to our understanding because he was there. A shellman assigned to one of the Helena's 5-inch 38 gun mounts, he had survived Pearl Harbor aboard that ship, not to mention all the other significant battles that preceded her sinking. And he is one of our last living links to this historic ship's legacy. When we left off, he had shared one incident that could be interpreted in retrospect as foreshadowing. When the Helena picked up survivors of the sunken carrier USS Wasp in September 1942.
Next thing that I can remember is in October, the first battle at Cape Esperance, we opened up in a night battle. All these battles took place at night.
Sometimes like 1 or 2 in the morning.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Cape Esperance, we used our searchlights, which was a no-no. And then some of the guys up on a searchlight, we got hit in the stacks.
You said you turned the searchlights on, and maybe some people aren't connecting the dots. The reason that was a bad idea is now the Japanese know where you are.
Yeah, exposed yourself, see?
And then you guys got hit.
Yeah. The next battle, night engagement we were in was the Battle of Guadalcanal. It lasted for 3 days. We went in with a bunch of troop ships to land on Guadalcanal. That was in the afternoon. What I remember about, we got a warning that the Japanese Air Force was coming down from, I think, Munda or someplace up north. And so they took the troop ships and moved them out of the slot. And we just waited for them to come in. There was 13 of us ships that day. 5 cruisers and 8 destroyers, tin cans. When they came in, I think we shot down 32 of them, something like that. And I think we were credited with 5 of them. After that, we hung around because we heard the Japanese fleet was coming down that night. I don't know how many ships we fought against that night. And that's when the Atlanta and the Juno, the Atlanta got sunk. The Juno, which had the 5 Sullivan brothers on it, and the San Francisco got hit real bad. And we were on our way back to Espirito Santo after the battle, and we run into a nest of submarines, I guess it was. They fired, and I heard that the torpedo went by us and hit the Juno, and the Juno just disintegrated.
Uh-huh.
Part of the Juno, I understand, the hull flew through the air and hit the San Francisco. And I think our captain was reprimanded, is that the word, for not sticking around, which would have been stupid. He says, yeah, let's get the heck out of here, you know.
And you mentioned the Sullivan brothers. But so then, on the Juno, there were 5 of them. They all died.
They all
become a kind of a legendary thing in the armed forces. They named a ship after the Sullivan brothers, but they changed the policy.
Yeah, not to have too many brothers or relatives on the same ship.
Right.
I think our ship radioed, and they sent a search plane of, you know, Catalina flying boats, PBYs, back there to see what was still left.
And all this is happening, and you still think you're invincible?
Yes, I'm still here.
Was there ever a point where that air of invincibility was rocked a little bit, where you started to think, you know, something like this could claim my life?
No, honestly, no. I took it day by day, you might say.
Well, I guess that's our backdrop then for July of 1943 in the Kula Gulf.
We bombarded that day, and then that night we were supposed to stop 10 destroyers from landing their troops. We had expended our armor piercing, and all we had left was bombardment ammunition that night. Flashless powder, you can't see it. The other powder.
The only powder you had was the one that was real obvious, invisible.
That's what I'm trying to say,
yeah.
So when we got into the Battle of Cooley Gulf, we started firing and we exposed ourselves with all this light, you know. We sunk a couple of ships and then we got hit. The first hit, it took the bow completely off. And I think we were doing 15, 20 knots, something like that. And being inside the mount, I don't see what's going on. You know, all I could do is feel things. Of course, we had a light inside the mount to see what we were doing. When we got hit and the bow got blown off, the ship just started quivering and shuddering from the motion of going forward. And then when we lay dead in the water, we got hit with two more. But right in the spot where we had been hit in Pearl Harbor.
Same spot.
Yeah, between the engine room and fire room amidships. All the lights went out. The gun captain says, abandon ship. So we got outside the mount, I did, and I reached for my life jacket, which was outside. You didn't wear your life jacket inside. No life jacket. So I got down and coming out of the light into the dark, you could hardly see anything real good, you know. So I got down on my hands and knees, and the teak wood decks were crackling. And next thing I know, I was in the water. And I looked up and I could see a silhouette of the two stacks kind of bending together. And I thought, I better get away from here. I was told, get away from the side of a ship if it's going down because it might suck you underwater, you know. I swam away from the side of the ship, no life jacket. I looked around, what the heck am I going to do here, you know. Still looking around and all of a sudden I found a life raft. And I was really tired by then.
I bet.
From swimming. So I put my arms inside of the bales of line outside the life rings. You couldn't get inside because that was reserved for the wounded and stuff. So I hung there for a while, and then all of a sudden, here comes a life jacket, a Mae West. I put that on. Got that on. I tied
it just floated
on.
Right to you.
Yeah, it was just floating around.
Uh-huh.
And then I found a pneumatic life jacket, which fitted around your waist, and you used the CO2 bottle. I tried to put that on to have it inflate, but it was dead, so I just blew it up manually. So I had a life jacket around my gut, a pneumatic life jacket, and it made West. So then that's when I was comfortable being alongside, outside the life raft. And then I looked over and I saw, which I thought was a silhouette. So I said, I wonder what the hell that is. So I swam over that way. I didn't know whether it was Jap or what, but as I got close to it, it was the Radford. So as I got close to it to get aboard, the ship got underway, because the battle was still taking place.
Yeah.
And so it got underway, and here I am, you know, by myself out there in the water again. So I'm swimming around, and here comes the Nicholas. Fortunate enough, I got the head cargo nets over the side. I grabbed the cargo net, got on, and held on for dear life. I climbed up and got up underneath the torpedo tubes. The ship got underway and went down the other end of the harbor, still during the battle. I was close enough to where I saw the torpedo tube move when they shot it out. Anyway, the battle was still going on, and what I remember about the whole thing is loaded with crude oil and eyes burning, skin burning and stuff.
You were covered with oil from being in the water all that time.
Yeah, all that crude oil and stuff. They sent us down to the engine room. We got some of that light diesel, and that's what we cleaned off and took as good a shower as we could. And they gave us clothes, you know, dungarees and stuff, so we'd have something to wear. And as we pulled into Tulagi, it seemed like everybody on the shoreline and the ships and all, everybody got out and gave us a welcome and a salute, you know. And then they transferred me to the Honolulu with a bunch of guys. And then we got underway and went down to Espiritu Santo. And I stayed there with the 3rd Special Seabed Battalion till we got orders to come back to the States. And I think put us on the Lew Wallace, a Liberty ship. It was only built to make one trip. And coming back to the States, you could actually look out from inside the ship through the hull when the ship moved. You could just see the daylight outside.
You weren't sure you were going to make it on that thing,
huh? Oh, well, everybody was so happy. We had card games going, and everybody was trying to make a buck, you know.
So that night, Cooley Gulf, how long were you in the water?
I keep telling myself 2 hours, but I don't think I was in there that long.
Somewhere between 1 and 2.
Yeah, you can't judge time. Oh, here's another thing. after it got sunk, you know, here I am in the water, and the first thing comes to my mind is, what the hell is my mother going to say about this? Mm-hmm. Yeah, because in Pearl Harbor, they didn't notify. At first, I was missing, you know, and they notified her back east in Massachusetts.
So she got a telegram saying your son is missing after the attack on Pearl
Harbor.
At first,
yeah, and then found out that I was still around. While I was in the water and I was swimming around, and the first thing I thought about is I kicked my shoes off. I had my socks on. So here I'm paddling my feet, and then they filled up, the socks filled up with water, and the first thing come to my mind is, boy, that thing looks like lures. I hope them sharks don't think the same thing.
Yeah. With white socks kicking
around?
Yeah,
white socks, yeah.
Did you see any sharks anywhere?
No. Good. No, but it was on my mind.
Sure. You know, maybe this is a dumb question, or maybe you've never considered it before, but had that Mae West not floated by, or the life jacket not floated by, do you think the outcome would have been any different?
Only the guy upstairs knows. Wasn't my time, I guess.
Because you were already pretty exhausted.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah, when I swimming without a life jacket, the water wasn't really rough, but it was rough enough where it took a little effort. And then all this stuff going through your mind, you can't see. What the hell happened? You know, where's the ship? A lot of things went through my mind.
You mentioned your eyes burning, too, from getting oil and stuff.
Yeah, that crude oil is just like, almost like tar, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, real heavy, heavy crude.
This is a serious nightmare that you're living in. Do you remember anything that went through your mind during that time?
Goofy things.
Yeah?
Where the hell's my wristwatch?
Maybe God didn't want you to know how long you were in the water.
That, and like I told you, what's my mom going to say about this?
You know? What did she say about it?
She was just happy that, because when I come back to the States, I went on survivor's leave and spent 30 days there, and then I came back to San Francisco, and I went over to TI there, and I was going to be assigned to the Reno. Hmm. And I just come right out and told him, I says, you assigned me to Reno, I'm going over the hill. I'm not going aboard one of the May 8 cruises. The guy saw that Juno blow. Mm-hmm. That scared the hell out of me. So they put me on the next best thing, a minesweeper.
That's not dangerous.
Yeah, so then I went to the Santa Barbara State College, had a course in minesweeping there, and then Long Beach, Terminal Island. And at that time, Robert Montgomery was in charge down there, the actor.
Yeah?
Yeah, and then I went up to Portland, Oregon, and I picked up the caravan, AM-157.
So you mentioned coming home on survivor's leave. And the whole point of that is you've survived something. You've been through something that other guys did not survive. When did you find out about how many of your crewmates died, and were there any of your friends that went down with the ship?
When the Helena was sunk, there was a number of guys that got picked up by the destroyers. Mm-hmm. And then there was a bunch of guys that clung to the bow of the Helena.
Right.
And then there was some guys that were in motor launches and stuff. And I think there was 100-some-odd guys that ended up on one of the islands over there. There's a long story about that, the rescue of them guys on that island.
Did you know any of the guys that died when the Helena sank?
Oh, yeah, Albanese. I think there was about 8 or 10 guys that I went through boot camp with. Hmm.
Well, and I guess the implication is that could have been you.
I guess, yeah, but like I say, it just wasn't my time. That guy upstairs had controls.
Do you ever think about that? I mean, you think about meeting your wife, having children. I see grandchildren in Air Force uniforms on the wall over here. None of them would have ever been born.
That's right, yeah. Like I say, yeah, I had my day. I was married twice, and then 48 years, Ellie and I were together, never had an argument, just best thing ever happened to me.
And none of that would have ever happened.
Yeah.
Guys were killed on your ship at Pearl Harbor.
Yeah.
A lot of them killed at Kula Gulf.
Yeah.
You had to survive in the water, had that Mae West show up, the life jacket show up.
The Nicholas was my baby.
A lot of things had to go just right for you.
They did.
When you think back on that, what do you think was the closest call or the most amazing thing that you endured?
I really can't pinpoint on it. And I, like I say, I just think that I was lucky. Lucky as heck. I'm fortunate that I can remember a lot of this stuff at my age.
You really are. 75 years ago, the rallying cry was, remember Pearl Harbor.
Yeah, that's another thing. You don't hear that very much.
No, we don't.
No, you don't.
But when you say it, it means something.
To me, it does, really. When I think that people don't remember, it kind of upsets me.
What should we remember? For people that weren't alive then, that didn't experience it the way you did, what do we need to remember?
People have short memories. They're already forgetting 9/11.
Yeah.
They're already forgetting that.
So what is the lesson of Pearl Harbor? What can we take? What should we remember?
Remember, Pearl Harbor, what happened and why it happened. You weren't alert.
One of the enduring images of Pearl Harbor, well, there's a few of them, but they involve the Stars and Stripes. You know, that Remember Pearl Harbor poster that went all over the country in the wake of the attack had a tattered flag flying among the smoke. Hickam Field had that flag on the pole. It's one of the most famous photos there. When you look at the flag now, what does it mean to you?
The population of the United States should have more respect for it, for one thing. And everybody should try to get into service and serve the country, man and woman. I don't go along with the idea of them being on the same ship together, because that could be awful distracting.
You saying you would have been distracted if you had women on your ship?
You better bet you. You better bet you. And even at this age, I'm not too behind schedule, I think.
There's something else that I want to say. I need to say thank you. Thank you for serving our country. Thank you for telling your story. Is there something that you would say you're most proud of?
That I was a member of the armed forces, the Navy, and the best ship I ever served on was the Helena. A lot of friends I made in the Navy, and the result of being in the Navy, I have a lot of friends now.
And he's made some new friends just in the last year or two because of some pretty incredible adventures he's been fortunate enough to experience. We're going to explore more of that with 96-year-old Ski Bernacki of Jamestown, California, when Hometown Heroes comes right back after this.
Have you ever looked at a box of old videotapes or photos and said, one of these days I'm going to do something with those? I know the feeling. But more importantly, I found the solution at VHSmaster.com. VHS Master will take all your old VHS and 8mm tapes and reels and convert them to DVDs and digital videos, ensuring that your priceless memories will last for years to come. They'll even preserve and restore photos, slides, and audio cassettes. Go to VHSmaster.com. That's VHSmaster.com, and tell them you heard about them on Hometown Heroes.
Hi, it's Paul Leffler with an important number for you to remember. 22. That's how many people die every day in America while waiting for an organ transplant. 22 every day. But together we can reduce that number. Did you know one organ donor can save the lives of up to 8 people? April is National Donate Life Month. So don't wait. Register as an organ donor today at the DMV. Or skip the line and do it online in just minutes at DonorNetworkWest.org.
Honoring veterans from sea to shining sea. You're listening to Hometown Heroes with Paul Leffler.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes, catching up with 96-year-old Ski Bernacki of Jamestown, California today in light of the news that his ship, the USS Helena, has been discovered at the bottom of the New Georgia Sound in the Solomon Islands nearly 75 years after it left this young sailor swimming for nearly 2 hours in oily, treacherous waters. I mentioned earlier that it's been quite a couple years for Ski, with many unexpected developments and opportunities coming his way after he decided to finally open up about what the 20-year Navy veteran had been through all those years ago.
So I don't think I've gotten to ask you about being there at Pearl Harbor for the 75th anniversary with all those other survivors. Tell me about that experience. What did you do? What did you see? And what was that like?
Well, there weren't very many Pearl Harbor survivors. There's a lot of guys that were in World War II, you know, and Korean. And I think there was less than 100 actual World War II veterans. And that one group of 4,000 people, we had that deal there, and they mostly talked about the battleships. And I looked all over for someone off to Helen, and finally I looked over one. I couldn't believe there sits this guy, and he had a big sign on his chest. I'm a Pearl Harbor survivor, and I was off to Helen, and we really hit it off. He's from upper part of Montana right now. I talk to him every once in a while. He was up forward with the bow got blown off. I think he was in turret two. Because when the bow got blown off, it went right at turret two.
So did you guys trade some stories? Were you sharing memories of some of the same events that you were both on the ship for?
Well, I didn't know him because he was in a 6-inch battery. I was in a 5-inch battery, you know, and they used a different section of the ship up forward, and I was amidships. So when you get 1,000 guys on a ship like that, you don't get to know everyone, you know. But I recognized them, honest to God, I really did. And even after all, I get a pretty good memory for faces and stuff that happened years ago. People I knew, people that passed away, that went through boot camp with, I'd say a name like Albanese, and I can see his face. I don't know what it is. I get some kind of ability to reminisce or whatever you call it and remember.
Tell me also about the honor flight. So you go with 60-plus other veterans to Washington, D.C., and go over to the World War II Memorial where they've got right there, December 7th, 1941, and it talks about what happened.
Oh, God, I got pictures of myself in front of the Guadalcanal Monument. It was really a wonderful experience. I'm so happy that I got to go, and I don't know, you don't know how much I want to thank you. You know, I really, really mean it.
Well, we're all trying to thank you, that's the point. But was there anything about that trip that surprised you?
I thought many times, I only went to Washington one time, and that was many, many, many years ago. And I says, one day I'll get to go back down there, and beginning, what's his name, I got to go. The weather was good, and I enjoyed all the guys. And there was something else, it's something every veteran should get a chance to go and see. People were so nice and friendly and thoughtful about everything. It really made you feel like, wow.
So from the end of the war to when you talked to Chase for that first article 5 years ago, for all that time, all those years, almost 70 years, did you ever talk about your time on the Helena with anybody?
Oh, again, once in a while somebody say, what'd you do during World War II? As I was on the Helena after she got sunk, I went on mine there. Minesweeper, and I put 20 years in the Navy. I operated out of Pearl for many years till 1956, and that was the last time. When I left there, I said, I'm never going back to that place again. And so in 1956, I started traveling around the Pacific. I was in Karachi and Tsingtao and China, and then I went to the South Pole in 1947.
High jump?
Yeah, high jump, yeah. I was in on that.
I don't think I asked you about Operation High Jump before. What did you see down there?
I was in the Central Group. I went down there on the AK-93. We left Port Hueneme and have proceeded down there. There was 5 ships in my group. The Mount Olympus, the Yancey, the Merritt, the Submarine Senate, and the Northwind, which was a Coast Guard cutter icebreaker. Then the Burton Island came in, the first Navy icebreaker, came in on the shakedown cruise and brought our mail down there. I actually lived on the ice down there, right by Little America. All the stuff that was taking place down there, the Gold Devil sleds, the Mars and Matt, and the Caterpillar tractors, the DCs there, man, trying to build a landing strip with that Mars and Matt, and it sinking down. Willie was marking the trails with bamboo flags just in case. Snow down there isn't actually snow. It's like ice crystals and sand. When a Willie War comes up, it's just 30, 40 feet high, and you can't see nothing. Just stay right where you're at. I named an avenue down there in Tent City after my first wife, Virginia Boulevard. Oh, that's another thing. Yeah, the Submarine Center couldn't maneuver through the ice floes, and then the north wind took her out. And we just laid there in the ice, and the ice floes just kept moving us around. You should have saw the hull on the ships after we pulled into Dunedin, and when we come out of the ice, it was just like a washboard where the ice had pushed in the hull between the frames. We mapped that whole continent. I felt more comfortable down there than I did in a lot of places that I've been out there that much.
Yeah.
you can always just, if something come up, you just stay right where you're at, and then they wait for the, because the weather changes down there just a matter of 1 minute to the next sometime.
Did you walk outside with any skin exposed at all?
No, you think you wore all that warm clothing, face masks and all. You think if you took a leak, it froze time and hit the hit the deck.
That's a pretty eye-opening experience.
Yeah. And then I did a lot of experimental stuff. There was one deal that we had where they were trying to perfect a navigation bomb in the trench north of Hawaii. I was in on that. And then they had a V-2 rocket one time that they were experimenting with. And had a bunch of ships lined up in the trench off of Hawaii. I think it's 300 miles long or whatever it is. And they stationed a bunch of ships in a row, and this thing took off, and you could actually watch it. It was so slow going through the air, and everybody was taking pictures of it or whatever reason they were doing that. It was a V-2 rocket. See, when the war ended, I went to reconstruct the company commander school in Bainbridge, Maryland. They sent me right back out to the West Coast pushing boots. I pushed two companies. That's when I went to South Pole. I volunteered. Oh, I was in on that secret deal that they had in Ulithi. He had about almost 1,000 ships ready for the invasion of Japan. And I was there the day that that tanker got blown up by a kamikaze submarine in the atoll, in the Ulithi Atoll.
Yeah, a lot of people have never even heard of suicide submarines, but they absolutely existed. It might actually be more accurate to refer to them as manned torpedoes, because that's really what they were. The Japanese called them kaitens. But you saw firsthand how deadly they were, and I have a photo of that burning oil tanker up for you at hometownheroesradio.com.
We left Guam in October, I think it was, 44, and we were escorting the William Ward Burroughs with a bunch of underwater demolition guys, and now they call them SEALs. And we were going to take them, we were supposed to take them to Peleliu, Palau, Castle Roads in that area. And anyway, and we left at 4 o'clock in the afternoon. By morning time, the waves were so high, 50, 60-foot high waves. And half the time, you couldn't even see the troop transport that we were escorting. And here we are, 184 foot long. We secured everything topside. Guys were laying in the passageways, couldn't get up, regurgitating, and oh God, it was something else. And then we pulled into Ulithi. I'm not sure if it was in that storm or there was one right after that. There was three destroyers that were capsized, and with all hands. They don't talk about this stuff, but I got an article about it. Three destroyers turned over, capsized because of the ballast. I tell that story and God, come on. Can't be telling the truth about that.
Well, I believe you, because you're talking about the Hull, the Spence, and the Monahan, and we've heard here on this program from survivors of those destroyers. That was Halsey's Typhoon, or Typhoon Cobra, in late 1944. So what did that feel like on the minesweeper you were on?
Well, like you say, we took at least a 40-degree roll. It's a wonder we didn't turn over ourselves, and we could come back, and the metal on the ship bent so bad that the paint peeled off the bulkheads in sheets and flew through the air like razor blades. The floats, the pigs, and the minesweeping gear, a lot of it was all just bent up and tore up. And the gooseneck on the mast just was whipping back and forth. They secured the battery up forward. They had a 3-inch battery on the forecastle. And the captain took Captain Cecil E. Walden. He says, secure the battery. We rigged lines topside if you had to go anywhere. You had to hold on with a preventer, so you wouldn't get pulled over the side.
I'm thinking there's a lot of guys, and I've encountered a lot of World War II vets who are very hesitant to go back there, to get into it, to talk about the things they went through, even sometimes to go on something like the honor flight, because they just don't want to bring that stuff up. But how much has your life changed since you decided to tell your story to Chase? How much has opened up to you in these last 5 years?
I withheld everything. I didn't want to go back there. And once I broke that ice, I feel so relieved. And I tell these guys, get a chance, go ahead and go. Yeah, as a matter of fact, I try to get this good neighbor of mine to go. It relieves a lot of pressure on. There's a lot of guys who don't believe it, but get your mind thinking about something different. you relieve yourself.
And what do you think is next? You've had all these things, all these developments, all these exciting opportunities. What's next for you?
Well, I'm going back to Tucson to the Cruisers Association, and I think that'll be my last one because my legs are getting so bad I won't be able to do too much more traveling. But I'm going to tell them all about Helena.
And after you've had so many interesting connections so far, do you kind of go into that with anticipation? Hey, I might meet somebody else who's connected to XYZ and the dominoes start to fall for you?
I'd just love to meet some more guys. I think I'm one of the last ones off the hell of the gosh.
That he is, Ski Bernacki, 96 years young. And isn't it amazing to see how that decision to finally take a look back into his past ended up giving him a lot to look forward to? If you take a look at hometownheroesradio.com or the Hometown Heroes Facebook page, you'll see Ski taking in some of the images from the ship he never thought he'd see again. And you can also link to more information from paulallen.com and other items discussed today. Thanks again to Chase Anderson for introducing me to Ski and for setting a powerful example in his friendship and service to this spirited veteran who is so looking forward to their next adventure together. We can't go down and touch the Helena, but we got a heavy dose of her history today. And next time on Hometown Heroes, we're going to visit a museum where you can get up close and personal with some amazing military aviation history. Thanks for listening to the program today. I'm Paul Leffler, reminding you again that freedom is not free. If you spent much time listening to Hometown Heroes, you've probably heard veterans from all over America talking about the mission of the Honor Flight Network, taking World War II veterans free of charge to see their memorial in Washington, D.C.
I wanted to see it. I've always wanted to see it since they built it. And to see all those guys there that did survive, and then they get emotional. Pretty soon you get emotional, too.
I tell you, that honor flight, I just can't believe what a wonderful deal it is.
Everywhere people came up to us, military guys and civilians, and wanted to shake our hands and thank us for all we did. I kept saying there were 16 million of us, you know, and I only did a little piece. But it was just an emotional high.
When it comes to our men and women in uniform, all gave some, and some gave all. A reality underscored as veterans visit the World War II, Korea, and Vietnam memorials and Arlington National Cemetery.
All those white crosses, they go into your heart. You just know that there's good guys there, but they had to die. For what? So you could live.
And while they are still living, Honor Flight gives the rest of us a chance to express our gratitude. Won't you encourage the World War II veterans in your life to put in applications for this all-expenses-paid journey to their memorial?
It does something for each of us who have been veterans who go back, whether we're a guardian or whether we're honored as a guest on the flight. It completes our life, really. It gives us a sense of fulfillment that we weren't able to have before, I think.
If you live near me in Central California, find Central Valley Honor Flight at cvhonorflight.org. Wherever you're listening, there's a hub in your area, and you can find it on the national website, honorflight.org. Sign up a veteran, volunteer to help, or donate to this important and time-sensitive mission. It's amazing what it means to these members of our greatest generation.
I'm telling you, they make you feel so good and so wonderful. Let me tell you, I can't preach enough about this. You listening?
The manner in which we were treated and greeted and acted toward was just awesome. It made me believe that the people of the United States are just wonderful.
Time is of the essence. Team up with Honor Flight today and help give our veterans one more tour with honor.